The views and opinions of this podcast are solely those of the creators and do not reflect any streaming service or platform. This podcast contains strong language and contrarian viewpoints that may be objectional to some listeners. Listener discretion is advised.
Welcome to Three Geeks in a Microphone podcast. I'm Dean.
I'm Art.
I'm Russ.
And I'm Matt.
Matt, nice of you to join us again. You're going to be a regular fixture. We're liking this. So today we are, why are we doing this, guys? Russ, this is your fault.
I know it's definitely my fault. You know, I wanted to make you guys suffer so you can understand where I'm going through in life right now.
So our audience knows we are reviewing the 1980 film Xanadu. All right, guys.
Is this a film? Is it really a movie? It's on film, but I don't think this is a film.
I think
it's kind of like one of those Andy Warhol videos where the person just sits there and then all of a sudden they blink.
No, this is someone's fever dream. They were able to hack their brain and record their fever dream.
No, this was an LSD flash. That's all it was. Yeah, LSD and coke.
I've never even been drunk, so this is the closest thing I've been to on drugs. Then
it's like a more enjoyable version of this.
All right, guys. Yeah, as usual, I remember. Do you guys remember the first time you ever saw this film? Did you see it when you were younger? Or?
No, I was actually pretty drunk trying to watch it this time, and I couldn't stay conscious. I couldn't possibly get enough alcohol in me to justify continuing to watch this movie. I'm not sure if I went to sleep or I was blacking out. I might have been blackout drunk. Oh, fuck it. I think I was.
You didn't imagine all of this. It actually happened.
I know. That's awful.
I want to see Art's remake of this movie. What he that fine line between where he was in reality watching this movie and its mentality state.
Yeah. Oh, we'll get into that.
I saw this movie years and years ago. I don't remember if it was on cable or what, but it had to be in, my guess, probably the 90s. I saw it on cable or something. What about you guys?
I actually think I saw this at the theater when I was a young kid. My mom took me and my sister. My sister is a hardcore Olivia Newton-John fan at the time, mostly because of Grease and, you know, whatever. So I have these faint childhood memories of this. And then I saw it again when I was like in junior high. It came on like KPTX or Channel 12 out of Portland, Oregon on a Tuesday afternoon when I was in junior high, and I had stayed home sick from school.
Oh boy.
So I was sick, so I watched it. So maybe it made more sense to me then.
That's probably the ideal state to be in to watch this movie is ill and drugged up.
Not Quill and Xanadu.
I knew of this movie. I was born in 77, so I was too young to have really seen this when it came out. But I knew of this movie. I just never saw it until two nights ago. So thank you for that.
You're welcome. And,
so I went into this completely
I feel
raw.
Evil.
I went into this raw and angry. like you guys know, I'm Mr. Positivity. I can look at a lot of different movies that we've covered already and glean some joy from them, even if they're terrible. And point out the good parts as well as the bad. This movie just sucks. This movie is a piece of dog shit, but it's not even like your dog's shit. It's like dog shit that you're walking down the road and you see some dog shit, but you don't even care enough about that shit to do anything about it. You're just like, oh yeah, hey, there's some dog shit. I'm just going to keep on walking. That's this movie.
I actually feel like we stopped while we're walking down the sidewalk and we find the dog shit. I feel like after watching this movie, we tasted the dog shit to make sure it was dog shit.
And then we immediately regretted that decision.
Pretty much.
Yeah, this one was hard. This was a hard one to get through.
I'm out of booze.
I'm out of booze.
I didn't even watch it drinking or imbibing in anything. So
I couldn't do it sober. There was no way.
I think had you done it sober, your notes probably would have been just as angry as mine.
My notes look like this. That's it. Wait. I'm still trying to figure out what the fuck I wrote.
My notes are all like exclamation points and capitals.
I can't believe you guys took notes.
It took me four tries to get through this movie because I kept blacking out.
Well, I went into it pretty serious, and I was like, you know, the first four or five notes I'm writing, like, hey, what's going on with this? Hey, why is he dressed like a cowboy? Why isn't he actually doing any work? What's the point of this guy? Where did she come from? And then it's like, and then it just devolved into just like, fuck this movie. I hate this. Ugh. Exclamation points. This feels like everyone is in a different movie.
Wow.
All right. Poor Gene Kelly too. Like I felt like she was acting under duress in this movie.
Yeah, I think it's like the reason this was the last movie.
Was he blackmailed?
It's like, yeah, I felt like he was kidnapped and they were like, you're gonna do this movie or we're gonna kill your grandkids.
Yeah, exactly. And then finding out that they made him dance even after he signed on not to dance, you said, Dean?
Well, I'll get to that.
Just adds to the whole held hostage theory.
I don't know about you guys, but while I was researching this, I found a very interesting documentary about the making of this film.
Somebody spent the time to make a documentary about the movie.
I don't know if we can bag on them. Look what we're doing right now.
Touche.
You're welcome, guys.
But when we get there, it's interesting. So let's start it off. So I will say this: the opening is really cool. I love how they do the Universal Planet, the logo, and as the aircraft goes around, it's different eras, 1940 style. I thought that was really cool.
I thought that was one of the few things that I did think was appealing about this movie. I feel like it's wasted on this movie, though. Like, I would rather see that at the beginning of a better movie because I like that, you know, the going through the years, kind of like its evolution.
Right.
The flying saucer got a little bit hokey, but...
it was cool up until the saucer.
Yeah.
I was actually rethinking my choices in life at that point, so I missed.
So... we open up with Sonny, and he's painting and he sucks, and what is it he says when he leans out the window? What the fuck does he say? The first time you hear him say anything, it's to what is it, something like, I should have done something else. He rips up the paint.
It was something like, I suck and that's what I get for having dreams, or
yeah,
what are guys like me having dreams for? Some inane garbage.
Yeah, guys like me don't deserve dreams or something. He rips it up, the painting he's doing, and he throws it out the window. By the way, it is painfully obvious that whoever was drawing that was not him.
No, I'm pretty sure it was the guy from AHA. Like that's what they were trying to do, but yeah, they fucking failed.
So
and Sonny is played by Michael Beck, and Michael Beck's been in some pretty good stuff. I mean, he was along with Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly are all way too good for this movie. He was Swan in the Warriors, and I mean he was in Megaforce, and he was in just a bunch of stuff.
This movie started off life as it was going to be a cheap, low-budget movie just on the roller skating fad in California at that time.
Ugh.
And that's what it was going to be. And they knew it was going to be a low-budget, you know, just a quick movie. And then for some reason, Olivia Newton-John signed on to it. The script went through six rewrites. Six. And they were still doing tweaks while they were filming.
Wow.
It's,
I mean, this has the feeling of a movie that was written six times, because it feels like they took a script, threw it up in the air, and lost some of the pages. And they picked up what they could and were like, fuck it, this one got ran over by a truck, but whatever, we'll have him play clarinet on the beach.
So,
yeah, that whole clarinet scene, that's just so weird. He just randomly walks up to some guy who's minding his own business.
Hold on. Wait. So, okay, so he rips up the painting, throws it out, and I'm sorry, it's some of the worst animation I've ever seen. The papers blowing in the wind. And of course, it comes up to the mural, this huge mural on the side of the building. Now, whoever did the artwork for this was really good. Whoever did the paintings and whatnot. But who in the hell in Venice Beach in 1980 has a huge mural of muses on the side of the building with this 70s feel jukebox in the background? It looks like something of painted on the side of a van, you know, like van art from the 70s.
I feel like that honestly wasn't that outlandish to me. I feel like that's probably what Venice looked like in 1980. I mean, disco was huge, and I say that not facetiously. That was probably a very normal thing.
That actually wasn't on a building, though. That was just a painting that they photoed. Did so it was actually something that they you look around the edges, you can see it's matted on film magic. So it was never really on the side of a building anywhere.
I never noticed it. Okay. So
that would look weird now. I don't think that 40 years ago, I don't think that would have been, you know, crazy.
Yeah. But here in Silverton, Oregon, 40 years ago, we had someone paint a rainbow on the side of a building, you know, and it's like, oh, man, a unicorn.
That was normal. I mean, that was Silverton, Oregon. So I'm used to that kind of stuff. I grew up near the beach in Florida. So, I mean, you know, there's all kinds of like wacky, you know, design and stuff like that. I just would have seen that and I would have been like, oh, California, disco.
So here we get the first dance number with the muses.
And, oh, yeah.
Now, I'm assuming people can see this. It's a busy street. Because if you remember later, there's a seating area directly across. So in the middle of the day, no one fucking noticed these nine chicks come to life and start like glowing and dancing in the middle of an alley.
Well, they people are still coming down from the 60s and 70s, man. Fuck, that shit happens all the time.
They probably knew him by name. Oh, there's Brenda.
There's Brenda.
That's the thing too, is like, this is supposed to be like Venice Beach or something.
Yeah.
I didn't grow up in California or anything, but my back of my mind of Venice Beach is like, or any beach in California is where all the freaks and weirdos kind of hang out.
Right.
You know, where they're roller skating and they're, you know, there's the guy in his underwear and there's the Rasta guy and there's the guy playing his guitar and, you know, there's all these characters. So I feel like that probably wouldn't have, I mean, if it was small town America, that would have been a different story. But I feel like, especially at that time, I don't feel like it was like, oh my God, Zoinks, look at them. I mean, granted, they're glowing and they're
right. They're, you know, covered in neon.
Doing the whole dance routine. But.
Well, they also like move at super speed at times when there's just an animated glow.
Yeah.
You know what would have been great is if someone needs to take that scene and then just get, you know, Photoshop or mix in and get the Ghostbusters in there and just start shooting their proton packs at them.
That would have been a more entertaining movie. I'll plop down $10 to see that.
Yeah, see, someone needs to go back and just like redo Xanadu by adding in scenes from other movies. You know, I mean, it's already a cluster, so why not make it more so?
I don't think anybody would notice.
Probably not. This movie might win an Oscar.
I think this movie needs a giant alligator to just eat everyone.
So, like you said, you see the muses. They're, like Russ said, they're flying around. They all fly up in the sky. And then we see Sonny on his way to work. And as he's walking through, he says it's a park. Okay. As he's walking through the park, Olivia Newton-John appears behind him on roller skates now. She's not dancing, just appears in roller skates, bumps into him, kisses him, and then takes off. And if I remember correctly, doesn't she disappear? She like turns into light again and flies away.
Yeah.
Again, no reaction from anyone around her. Now, I will say, go ahead.
Well, I don't know if anybody else can see her. Because she's his muse, right? Like, his muse. So I don't know if anybody else is even conscious of her being there.
So imagine what everybody else saw.
Wouldn't he have been like, he just got kissed by this girl. Wouldn't he be like looking at her and then see her turn into a white light?
Right. Everybody else is looking at a schizophrenic.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're looking at a guy that's making out with the air.
Right. How entertaining. That would actually make for a better movie.
That would be great. You know, they should go back special edition and have it just all be a nightmare.
Oh, God.
It could be a Jacob's Ladder scenario.
Oh no.
Or he imagined this whole thing. Oh, man, God. I don't know. I had a thought there and it left.
So, like I said, she kisses him. He gets to work at work. First of all, I will say this. I wish I would have looked it up. Did anyone look up what car he's driving?
It's a Woody, isn't it? It's a...
Yeah, is it from the 40s or the 50s? Oh, that's a beautiful looking car.
Probably be more like the 40s, I believe.
Mm-hmm. Late 40s, I think. It's like a Woody wagon or Woody Roadster or a Truckster or something. I don't know the exact model, but I wrote that down too. I'm like, why in the hell is he driving that car? If he's a starving artist,
how can you
even in 1980, that was a valuable ass car.
Right. That was my next point. Is like, how could he afford? Okay, not only how can he afford that car, how can he afford the apartment he's in?
It's he like, lives on the beach in right. California.
He goes in and you see they explain that all he does is he takes album covers and enlarges them for for advertisements and whatnot.
Doesn't Xerox also do that?
Well, this was I feel like this predates a lot of technology that came out in the 80s where it's like, hey, we don't need people to hand paint these anymore. We can just photocopy them.
Right.
It's kind of like people used to hand paint billboards too. And
yeah,
you know, that went the way of the dodo in the mid 80s.
Mm-hmm. So he, you know, you find out he's essentially a screw up. He hates his boss. And he's there for what? 5 minutes? Oh, and let me back up for a minute. Wait, the piece he's working on, of course, his boss tosses him down a record cover by a band called the Nine Sisters. And there is Olivia Newton-John on the cover. And he's flabbergasted. This is the chick I just kissed. I got to find her. So he's there.
Yeah, screw this job.
Yeah. So he had to beg to get his job back. And if I remember correctly, the boss takes him up into his office and he says, you know, if you buckle down, you can do it. You know, this is what I tell you to do. Paint it how you see it. And he's like, look at me. He's like, I did this piece of art over here, but I got out of it. I make really good money. You can too. You're smart enough to do it, but you just got to buckle down. And of course he doesn't.
Yeah. Speaking of that real quick, you know, mm-hmm. They make it sound like the boss is a complete ass.
Right.
The boss seems like he's probably a cool guy. It's just that Sonny's the ass.
Oh, right.
They paint him in this negative light like he's some kind of ball buster. And it's like, no, he's just trying to run his business.
Yeah. He just didn't yell at him. He's like, hey, come on up. And then he points out how he did art. And Sonny's like, I think you did the right thing. It's like, smart ass.
Yeah.
Like you might not like his art, but still, you don't have to be a douche about it.
Well, I think that was the remnants of that hippie, you know, 70s, 60s hippie anti-establishment. Like, oh, he's the boss man. We don't like him. Like, everybody sucks if they're not a free spirit.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's fucking dumb. Go back to the beach and paint garbage, weirdo.
So, I mean, he's literally there for what, 10 minutes? And he's like, I got to find her.
Yeah. So he takes off.
Right. He just runs around randomly until he finds her.
Well, he leaves and he's down at the beach, and this is where he meets Gene Kelly.
Oh yeah, that's right. He runs into him.
No, I think he's Pan.
Pan?
Yep.
Interesting.
If you think about it, if the muses in this movie are quote unquote real, I think he's Pan. Either doesn't realize it or is there to screw with that guy or push him farther.
I abandoned all the mythology in this, but I guess, yeah, that makes sense.
That's interesting. I believe it or not, I actually looked up the muses just to see, but I'll get there. Let's face it. Gene Kelly did this movie for a paycheck. There's no other way we can explain this, but if there is a shining spot in this movie, it's Gene Kelly.
Well, I mean, he's Gene Kelly and right. He's a legend and he's amazing. But there's, like you said, there's no way he read this script and was like, I'd like to do this project. Like that script literally had an envelope with money filled when he received it.
So I guess when he signed on for this, after he signed on is when they did another rewrite. How they got him, I have no idea. But it went through a major overhaul once they got Olivia Newton-John, because she was the first big star to sign on to it. And then somehow they got Gene Kelly.
She was, I mean, I don't think we can punctuate that enough, how popular she was around this time. In the late 70s, going into the early 80s, I mean, mm-hmm. She was a phenomenon.
Yep.
She was huge. She had hit singles. She was in Grease, obviously. But I mean, she was the it girl for years. And so, yeah, I mean, once they got her, it became a juggernaut of it. Basically, to me, this movie is a Olivia Newton-John sizzle reel. For like, hey, look, we got her and look at all this stuff she can do.
Mm-hmm.
Especially that medley at the end, but we'll get to that.
Right. But now, forgive me, I didn't look it up. The album Physical came after this, correct?
After this, yeah. That was 81, 82, I think.
Okay, so just after this. Because this came out in 80, so it's filmed in, what, 79? Okay. He meets Gene Kelly and they talk, which is kind of nice. And then as he's standing there, he sees her again. And he's like, hey, you're cool, but let me go chase after this chick. So he jumps on a Vespa. And who in her right mind is going to let some dude just take a Vespa? Oh, yeah, here you go. Go
ahead. Yeah, she's smiling. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, go ahead. Use it. You're cute.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a little jarring. It's like, yeah, I promise I'll bring it back. Okay, whatever.
So. Now, she's on roller skates, but he still can't keep up with her. He gets to the end of the pier and flies right into the water. Now, again, you might have answered, I think you answered my question here, Matt, because he looks back and sees her because she's standing to the left by that building when she waits, and that's when he goes off into the pier. My notes are like, no one saw her do, and she turns into light and flies away. No one saw her do this.
Yeah, I think he's the only one that can see her.
Okay.
Yeah, that was what I got from it, but I mean, who knows? I'm not watching it again to find out.
Yeah, so, totally not worth it.
Gene Kelly pulls him out of the water. And
how did Gene Kelly get there so fast?
Good question. I didn't think about that. Maybe
I think it's Pan.
Yeah, like Martin you're said, right, maybe. Gerard.
Go ahead.
Maybe no one else can see him too. I mean,
well, no.
If he was paying, does these muses have money too? Then, because they obviously needed money. Because Sonny sure didn't build Xanadu, or was it just a figment of his imagination again?
Well, no. He says later he went into the family construction business, and that's how he made his money in construction. So. But anyway,
you wouldn't really.
I think that shoots holes in the Pan theory. I think is because he had to bankroll that. So I don't know.
So they're having coffee in the little coffee shop, and Sonny never touches his. But anyhow, do you notice? Is it just me, or at this point in the film, it looks like Gene Kelly's hiding something from it? The way he's talking, especially when they're talking. It's like he knows something that he's not telling Sonny.
Like the movie sucks?
beyond that. But especially when they talk about, he's like, because he's like, I'm gonna find her. He's like, you might not want to do that. Something to that effect, you know, that might that might not be the best option here, because he's been in Sonny's shoes, but we don't know this yet.
Huh. I feel like he's his character has the kind of haunted, I had it all in my hands and I, you know, ignored it for 35 years or whatever.
Right.
Because he keeps making reference to that. Like, I haven't taken a chance since 1945.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel like, yeah, it's he's put there, I feel like, to represent the older version of Sonny from the 40s that has made the mistakes of not chasing his dreams or whatever. And he's the outcome. He's the here's what you're going to become if you don't go for it. And that's why Sonny has the old car. And that's why he knows who Glenn Dorsey is, or Glenn Miller. And that's why they have such a bond, is it's like, oh, you're an old soul and you're a old man that still wants to be young, like still has that young, youthful thing.
Well, you know, in that vein, I mean, if this is the outcome Sonny will get, did you see his house? Okay.
Yeah, I know.
Yeah,
it's
like, that's fine.
Yeah, but they kind of they play that down, though. It's not like he's living in luxury. I mean, he's got a nice place and he's got money, obviously, but he's not happy. He's, you know, he's basically, I feel like he's the, I buckled down and look what all I have, but I don't have my dreams, so it's all hollow.
Okay.
And I feel like that's the moral that it's trying to teach, even though it's inane.
You realize Matt probably just went deeper in Xanadu than anyone ever has.
And I didn't even have that as a note. I'm just giving it some kind of benefit from some god-awful reason.
So next, he meets with his buddy, who he paints his van again. You know, the 70s, the painted vans were the thing. And when he says, hey, can you give me a, at first he's like, well, which way are you going? I'm going east. Well, I'm going west. Can you give me a ride? Okay, fine. I'm expecting him to get in the passenger side. No, he's on fucking roller skates, a la Back to the Future, hanging on the back of this van. Oh,
there's another thing. We totally need to have like someone edit in some Back to the Future stuff right there in that movie.
Or just the music.
The music. Yeah,
The Power of Love.
So, don't need money. Need story.
Don't need anything. We're making this movie.
So as they're driving down the street, they just happen to go past the American Theater. And he says, oh, I'll stop here. Now, and of course, this is the exact same theater that's on the front of the record cover by the Nine Sisters.
Yeah, the old Pan Pacific Auditorium.
Yeah, go ahead. Take it, Russ. You know more about this than I do. Art Deco movie, or Art Deco.
That's why I actually have this. The best part of the entire movie is right here for me, is when they show the footage of that building. It was built in like 1935, Art Deco, and they used it. They actually had it in a couple car music videos, a couple other music videos throughout, you know, 70s and 80s. And then they were going to restore it in 1989, and it burned down the day before they started the restoration. But yeah, that whole building is just what makes why I've watched the movie more than once. And it's mostly because that little scene.
Well, you know,
it's a beautiful building too.
Oh, it is. I love Art Deco stuff anyhow. But interestingly, Matt, you probably have. Any of you guys ever been to Disney?
Oh, yeah. It's been a while, but
you notice the main gate you're going through? It looks like the theater.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah. They recreated it. There's a couple other places around the world that's done the same thing. And where the building was, they created the Pan Pacific something they named after it. And they have one of the pillars that they recreated.
Really?
But yeah. There's a lot of times people say, oh, they saved the pillars. No, those things were toast. They're gone. Everything was gone in the fire.
Did they know what started the fire, or?
No, they say that there were homeless people that had been living in there, and they assume that maybe someone had started a campfire. But we're talking, it was like summertime in California, so I don't know why they'd need a fire to keep warm, but.
It does get chilly at night there.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, inside, it's the timing of it all probably is something else involved, more sinister. Of course,
insurance fire.
Insurance fire, yep.
Yeah, because the building was all wood. You know, it was a wood structure built in 1935. And, you know, even restoring it, it probably would have cost
a fortune. But, and again, this is now the song in here is probably one of the bigger hits from this movie, the song Magic.
It's the only one that holds up, in my opinion. It's still a great song. The other ones are, you know, very much a product of their time. But yeah, I know we'll probably get into the soundtrack, but one of the few highlights of this movie is the soundtrack. And it, I mean, it was humongous. And Jeff Lynne and ELO did a lot. They did a lot of it and the scoring and stuff like that. So there's a pedigree there. It's good music. It's just,
sadly,
it's saddled into this movie.
Which then actually probably kind of put the end to ELO and Olivia Newton-John to a degree, because her career, you know, I think she had a couple hits, 81, 82, and then she was, ELO was pretty much.
She limped into the 80s. She didn't do a whole lot of movies. She did Two of a Kind with, was that what it was called? Two of a Kind, I think, with John Travolta.
Yeah.
And she had a couple of hits.
And that Two of a Kind only had any following because everyone's like, oh, it's a Grease reunion.
Yeah. Well, and they had that big song from that movie too, Twist of Fate. That was huge. So I feel like that they use that in the trailer for that too, just to get people to go watch it. Sure. Yeah, I mean, this movie hurt. I mean, they created the Golden Raspberries for this movie. Yep.
I was just about to bring this up.
What else can you say?
Again, the skating scene with them in here, and then we move to probably my favorite scene in the whole movie. Sonny goes back to see Gene Kelly, and for the life of me, Danny McLean, right? Yeah, that's
Danny McBride, McLean, Danny McLean.
He goes to his house to see him. It's a gorgeous house. It's got gold lame everywhere, and this is probably my favorite scene in the whole film. There's after they talk, he shows Danny all his memorabilia throughout the years, how he played with Glenn Miller and all these big band acts from the 40s. He mentions how he had a small club in New York, but it just didn't work out. So when he leaves, he's in this large, what do you call it, like a living room, or I don't know what you would call this room, but he does a 1940s dance number with Olivia Newton-John, Gene Kelly. And this was almost not in the film. When Gene Kelly signed on, he said specifically, no dancing. I will be in this movie, but I will not dance. After months after the movie had wrapped, they realized that there was no big interaction with Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly. So they approached him and said, would you be willing to do a dance number with her? And he did it on one condition. He's like, I will do it. It has to be a closed set. No one is allowed on, and only, you know, her, the choreographer, cameraman, sound guy, and a few people are allowed on set, but that's it. No one else is allowed on set. And he choreographed that entire scene. Gene Kelly choreographed that whole scene. In fact, the choreographer basically gave control to him. And what he did was, let me back up for a second. The choreographer and Gene Kelly after this movie became really good friends. They were friends until Gene Kelly died in like 93, 94. He's like, he was my mentor. He taught me how to shoot dance for the lens. And what Gene Kelly would do is that entire dance scene was centered on Olivia Newton-John. He played to her strengths and weaknesses. And I think it's one of the, I'm not a musical fan. I'm no fan of musicals or dance numbers, but it's just really cool to see. But then again, I'm a sucker for the 1940s. So, but to watch Gene Kelly dance like that, he's fluid. And he was what, in his 70s at that point?
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah, late 60s, early 70s, I think.
Yeah. I think he was like 73, I think. When I was talking to Dean the other day about this, I think we figured out he was somewhere around 73.
And to be able to move like that at that age, it's just phenomenal. And it's almost sad the way that was shot, because at the very end, you know, she jumps into his arms and, you know, he's got this huge smile on his face, and then it fades out to he's standing in the living room with his arms up and there's nothing there.
Yeah.
And he just kind of sits down in that chair and just, for lack of a better word, muses on what he just thought, what he just experienced. Any other thoughts?
She mused for him.
In fact, it's funny because before this happens, when Sonny's talking to him, he's flipping through that record album. And you see her as the singer for his band in the 40s. Go ahead.
No, I was going to say, I think that's her musing for him back then.
Yes.
Like she's doing for Sonny currently.
Right.
In the film. So that's why I think that's why I think nobody else can see her except for who she's like her target. And I think that's him doing that dance scene in the movie is him remembering her from when he was young. And, okay. And being his muse for when he was, you know, making music and doing his whole thing, which that just reinforces my idea that he's, you know, he's just a different version of Sonny, you know, from the past, not the same person, but he's a target from 35 years ago that's getting like a second chance, basically.
Right.
But it's kind of, you know. Again, I feel like I'm giving it way more credit than it deserves.
Right. But if there is a bright spot in this movie, that's it. I at least for me, that is the bright spot in this movie, that whole dance number with Gene Kelly.
Yeah. I'd agree, but it's also, I mean, you could have Gene Kelly dancing in an insurance seminar and it'd be great. So, you know, it's definitely the bright spot, but, you know, that kind of goes hand in hand with having Gene Kelly in your project.
Mm.
So in a world with Gene Kelly instead of Wilford Brimley doing the Liberty Medical commercials.
I could handle that.
So Gene Kelly telling you to eat your oatmeal.
Yeah. Stuff tastes like shit pudding.
Don't get diabetes. You can dance like me if you eat oatmeal.
Well, truth be told, I kind of, living with my grandmother, my grandma was always watching these 1940s, 50s, you know, dance numbers. And as a kid, I would sometimes watch them with her. So I knew who Gene Kelly was when I was little, you know, but anyway, I digress. So let's see. Next week, move on to, they kind of like have a date night with Kira and Sonny. And this is when they get into the second probably biggest song from the soundtrack, Suddenly. They go to, let's see what he's working on the painting and she just fucking appears. You got to admit, it's kind of creepy at one point because she just literally appears behind him in shadow. And then she disappears and comes around the other side of the painting. And scares the hell out of him. I'm like, well, yeah, it'd scare the fuck out of me. You're supposed to be in there alone and they're just chick. Anyways. So they're walking around and then they go into the sound stage where there's the different sets. As he put it, oh, it's just pictures for inspiration. They go into the weird booth and turn everything on. I thought this was a neat number, especially I felt that at one point they're walking around and they get stuck in a section where it's raining and they both pull out umbrellas and Sonny does the flip, and then they flip around and put the umbrellas together. That's right out of Singing in the Rain. Mm-hmm. So it's kind of like a small homage to Singing in the Rain.
Yeah, I was hoping that they weren't going to do a whole Singing in the Rain number, because I felt that was going to be way too on the nose. But
right.
Yeah, I picked up on that, and I was like, that's pretty cool. But, you know, that's where that ended for me.
Right. And then, you know, from there, Sonny, or next we see Sonny's car. He's got Danny with him, and he's showing, because let me back up for a second. Danny asks him, he says, you know, why don't you help me find a place? Because he wants to open a club. He's like, I've had every real estate agent in the city. I can't find anything. You help me. Some rando dude he met on the beach is going to fucking help him. But now here he finds the theater. And I like this part, because they're in, they're checking it out, and they're like, you know, this is well done. And this is when they envision what the club's going to look like. He's like, well, over here on the right, we can have like a big band set up, you know, and everyone's all done up. And then as in my notes here, as Sonny says, this is the 80s. Over here, we need these guys in orange jumpsuits.
Yeah, we need a rock band with orange jumpsuits.
Oh, and gosh. When he goes orange jumpsuits, I just cringe. I'm like, what is this? Some kind of weird fetish?
Well, interestingly, in the documentary I was watching, they interviewed the choreographer for this. And I think this is one of the more unique numbers they did, because it starts off with their, on the right, they're showing music from the 19, big band music from the 40s. And then they intercut it with, which is the band that's playing there is the Tubes, by the way. The guys in orange, that's the Tubes. And they're playing like a more modern version, I guess, if you will, 80s synth pop, and with the dancers. And the whole thing, literally the two stages merge together as this one cohesive dance number. The choreographer, when he did this, when the two sides were rehearsing, they never met each other. They never saw what the other side was doing until the day they filmed it. Hmm. And I don't know, I thought that was a really neat number, where you take, because they're two totally different styles of music, but they were able to mesh them together so it worked cohesively. And the costuming was beautiful. I will say this for this movie, the costumes were well done. Right.
Sorry, I got a dog barking.
That's all good.
So I must have just got some packages.
That's all right. It's they refer to this as the 80s 40s mashup.
Well, yeah, and I feel like that was, you know, that's exactly what they were trying to do, and it marries up with Gene Kelly and Michael Beck's characters, that they're trying to, you know, it's like, oh, the 40s and the 80s, and they're not that far apart, and they're not that different. And, you know, even though they are, it's, you know, they're trying to kind of meet in the middle, with him saying, oh, I want a big band with tuxedos. No, I want a rock band with orange jumpsuits. And it's a little bit like, you know, you got your peanut butter in my chocolate. No, you got your chocolate in my peanut butter.
Peanut butter.
And, you know, and it's neat that they're, you know, trying to, because I mean, think about going back to 1980 now, and then what's popular now. It's not as much of a continental divide as it was between 1980 and 1940s.
Right.
It was a different world completely. And now I feel like music from 1980 and music from today is a hell of a lot more cohesive.
Sure.
It's a lot more similar.
I feel you. I got you.
Yeah, but they definitely were going for that theme in this movie.
Wouldn't it be sad? You mentioned the peanut butter and chocolate. If they got the idea from watching the old Reese's peanut butter commercial, like, let's do that for the movie. We'll call it Xanadu.
And out of nowhere, she appears and gives the quote from Kubla Khan for Xanadu. Out of nowhere, she just, what are we going to call this place? We need an, she appears, and then he reciprocates. Let's call it Xanadu. Xanadu, yeah.
Because we all know that.
Xanadu. It was like, well, the first time I saw this, I had no clue what the hell that was.
But, well, why is a Greek muse, a Greek goddess, talking about Kublai Khan? Right. Like, talk about mixing your mythologies. I mean, Jesus.
Yeah.
Jesus. Well, they couldn't call it Reese's.
Couldn't call it Reese's.
Let's call it Hammurabi, because Hammurabi's law. At this point, that's when I wrote down, like, fuck this movie. Like, what does this even mean?
It would have made more sense to call it Olympus.
Yeah. Or anything Greek.
Right. The Acropolis or whatever. So,
really, they should have named it Sunny's. Had that downhole simplistic.
Yeah, let's call it Danny's Place, because that's what I would have called it in the 40s. See? I mean, yeah, any of that makes more sense than Xanadu. But Xanadu's more cocaine disco sounding, you know, it's more ethereal.
And it uses
an X.
And it's got an X in it.
You know? How often do you have a word starting with an X? I mean, come on. So
yeah, they could name it xylophone or xylophone.
Well, maybe they just really wanted to put this at the end of the alphabet.
Let's just drop
it. That it's hard to find.
Go open up a roller disco like that, because
yeah, they knew 40 years later when people are scanning Netflix, it'll take it's Xanadu and then the movie Zulu. You know, it's
yeah.
So next we go in and Malone, he's all jazzed up now. He goes into his boss. He basically says, "Fuck you, I quit."
Which, again, is such a douchebag move, because the boss wasn't that bad.
Yeah, and he gave him his job back.
Yeah, and then out of nowhere, he just quits.
And he's like, I'm quitting again. Ha! And you all can have free drinks when I open this bar that will probably close in 2 months, because...
Yeah, keep in mind that Sonny's not putting any money into this. He's just a creative. He's just an associate producer this club. And Danny's got all the money. And it's basically like the only moral of this story is that you can be successful if you meet a rich, eccentric guy on the beach and get him to like you. Like, that's all he does. That's all Sonny does in this movie, is he puts himself in a position where it's like, hey, you're pretty cool. I didn't know you were rich. Oh, neat. Oh, you want to open this thing and you want my help? Well, I don't know. Oh, okay. I guess I'll do it and I'll quit my job. It's like,
yeah, you go back to the interaction when he first had with Gene Kelly on the beach. He was kind of a douche to him too, because he's playing his clarinet and he's like, you can play anything a little more upbeat.
Right.
Like, yeah. I feel like you're playing for dead people.
Like, if I was the dude, Gene Kelly should have been like, screw you, get the hell out of here, you beach bum. Go paint your album covers and
fuck go off. Paint your garbage, you stupid cowboy artist.
Go kiss your imaginary woman.
yeah, go kiss your imaginary glowy skating woman. But like, they bond over old music. That's it. Like, that's all it takes to become a partner in a, you know, a startup business venture.
I guess so.
Yeah, that point too, I was just like, it's like, yeah, this is just so horribly written.
Now, interestingly, this next part, they didn't know how they wanted to film this. So
that didn't show at all.
Oh, yeah. But so at the last minute, the director was friends with Don Bluth. And he calls him up, and he calls him up and he says, hey, I'm doing this movie. Take a look at it. We need like filler here. Could you help me out? And they interviewed in this documentary, they interviewed Don Bluth, and I'm trying to remember exactly what they were working on at the time. I think it was The Secret of NIMH. They were right in the middle of working on The Secret of NIMH. So they stop and do that and does this.
Oh boy. And I hate it even more now.
And he says he wanted to make sure, and the choreographer, it was the model they used for Sonny in the animation. For all of his movements and whatnot, they just drew over top of him, of course. So he's like, I'm actually in the movie. And No, I never noticed it until I saw the director and the choreographer claimed that this movie is the reason why leg warmers got popular in the 80s. Because no one
and it had nothing to do with the aerobics craze of the early 80s.
People wanted to get physical.
Yes. But he claims that no one was wearing them until this movie came out. Now, when Olivia Newton-John is in her like muse outfit, right? She's wearing leg warmers. And if you
watch her physical, her video for physical and that whole album and everything, I think that had way more to do with.
Oh, and I agree with you. This movie. But if you go back and watch the animation part when she's like a fairy and then later she turns into, what is it, a bird?
Mm-hmm.
They're both wearing leg warmers. And
I will not go back and watch this.
I never would have noticed it.
I believe you.
Don Bluth not mentioned it. I went, what? And then I watched it again. I'm like, I'll be damn, this bird's wearing fucking leg warmers. Anyway.
That's the
animation sequence. Don Bluth, actually, from what I read, the movie Thumbelina that came out in the early 90s.
Mm-hmm.
My niece would watch it. They animated it. She loved it. There's a scene in it that they basically, Don Bluth Studio took what they did for Xanadu and just redid the animation, you know, just the drawings or however they did it, almost frame for frame, just over the top cover change, kind of like how they Filmation would change He-Man and Prince Adam, same animation drawings. So it's like the Xanadu scene is in Thumbelina.
Well, might as well, if you already have this, you know, 5-10 minute segment done, you just redraw it and you got more of your project done.
Yeah. It's kind of like how Disney would do it too. You know, you watch some of the, especially with Robin Hood, they have scenes from Cinderella and the Aristocats and all mm-hmm. that redone for, yeah.
Here we get to the show, the theater, and they're working on it. There's all the construction guys and he's drinking the champagne. And of course, Kira shows up wearing a green dress. It's the only time we ever see her in a green dress in this whole movie, which I find weird because they're consistent. Every time you see her, she's in the same outfit, except for here where she's wearing a green dress. Anyways.
I feel like that was probably Olivia going, you know, I don't want to keep wearing the same thing in this movie. Like, can I get some costume changes, please?
Well, she has a metric shit ton at the end, but...
Yeah. Oh, yeah. That's what I mean, is like, they probably gave her a taste of it, and then at the end, they're like, whoa, yeah, we'll dress her like a cowgirl and a peacock, and yeah, we'll do this whole thing.
So, it's probably one of the glitz line. Where do we get this? Where I need to get some glitz and pizzazz. What is it they both say? The Glitz Emporium or whatever.
Yeah.
Oh, when they're telling Gene Kelly he needs to dress up different, yeah. And they take him shopping. Yeah, it's like the Glitz, yeah,
and
Galleria or something.
The shopping trip. The note I have on this is shopping on acid.
Where the fuck do those people come from? Those weirdos.
Right. It's like and all the.
All the clothing racks. It's like the kids that went missing 10 years prior and the clothing racks they hid in them now coming out.
These are all the kids El Hihi hasn't gotten to yet.
They were hiding from him.
No shit.
And this is one of the more bizarre scenes of this whole movie. Now, I do like seeing Gene Kelly. He danced a little in the different outfits, which I thought was cool. And that 1940 Ford, that pink Ford that pulled up in the back was really cool. But... this whole thing was a clusterfuck.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was, it went hand in hand with what we talked about a little while ago is the whole like meeting. It's the crossbreeding of the 40s and the 80s where it's like, well, we're going to dress Gene Kelly up like it's 1980 and he's hip and in style. And it's like those two things kind of meeting, you know, ships crossing in the night kind of thing.
Right. But they kind of, they threw him in like a weird zoot suit too.
Yep.
Yeah.
And then he's got the weird cowboy fringe when he's coming out of that pink car. It's like, why? And then he's walking around a giant pinball machine. What the fuck is that? I thought he was in a clothing store.
I'm totally ripping off Elton John and Pinball Wizard from Tommy right there is what I got. You know, trying and failing, you know, the eccentric wardrobe and pinball, and come on, you know, it's going to be right up there with Tommy now, you know, because they got Gene Kelly hitting pinball bumpers.
Yeah.
And the whole thing with the chicken dressed like a spider crawling under those chick's legs.
Yeah, that and is probably what the fuck? That's what nightmares are made of.
That's where the acid trip goes bad. it's not like the movie
Litter and Crawling.
Yeah, it's literally crawling under their legs. It's like, what are you?
And was that a woman or was that a man?
I thought it was a guy, but.
Yeah, that's what I thought at first. And then I was like, is it a woman or is it a guy? And, you know, either way, it's like, you know, this 2021 doesn't matter. But back in 1980, that must have really messed with people. Everyone's quiet.
That would mess.
I don't even remember that part. I think I just like rage blacked out or something. I don't know. That doesn't even ring a bell.
It's probably like 5 seconds of pure freak out, scary horror movie type of stuff. This guy's crawling underneath a bunch of people's legs, wearing massive glitter makeup,
in a silver suit with spider webs all over it.
Yeah,
it's like this.
It's the most. It's fucked up. It's like it's so out of place. I what are they trying to be, like avant-garde or something here?
Absolutely. Yeah. I feel like that whole scene was like they were trying to, you know, and keep in mind, I mean, 1980, this is when MTV first, you know, was in its infancy.
Sure.
So I feel like they were probably influenced heavily by that whole movement, that avant-garde, like you said, like that video culture.
Joker,
where it's like, hey, if you're weird and wacky, then you're immediately cool no matter what you're doing.
What was that, Art?
Joker would have been proud. It's like the movie.
I don't know if it's art, but I like it.
Odd as it was. I mean, it already had a fucking cartoon in it. Then they add that bullshit. That was like the worst drunk I've ever had.
Oh, man.
Seriously, like I came to during that part and I'm like, fuck. Chicken.
That's why Art's been sitting there. He's still in fear. He's been so quiet this round, this review. He's just sitting there. Help me.
Yeah, I just can't get out of it.
So,
you know, we should get a cardboard cutout of that crawling person and send it to Art.
No. Fucking no. So,
well, Halloween's right around the corner.
Oh, that would make great. Oh, man. Have a Halloween party Xanadu themed.
Oh, terrible.
Oh, it would be. It's supposed to scare people. Scare people and create nightmares. Isn't that perfect?
So the next. Oh, my God. So the next section here is we get Sunny and Kira in. They're at Sunny's apartment, I believe. And they're talking, and he's trying to find out information about her. And where do you live? Oh, I live in an apartment on the second floor with my sisters. Well, who are your parents? Or what's your last name? I have the same last name as my parents. Well, who are your parents? They're my parents. She's purposely talking in circles. And then she drops the bomb on him and says, I'm a muse. And he's like, whatever. And I did find it was kind of little. It was a little hokey when she hands him the fucking dictionary and says, look it up, page 762. So he looks it up. And of course, do you believe me now, Sonny? And then he turns on the TV and she appears in the movie he's watching. And the character in the movie says, Sonny, she's really, if the lady says she's a muse, she's a muse.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was...
I hate all of this. I hate all of this scene, all of this movie. It's just clunky garbage.
Yeah. I'll be honest, that scene there when the dictionary and the TV, I skipped over it. I remember it, and it was miserable.
What do you mean we can't be together? You're a Greek goddess?
No. Right now, I did. At least the movie got it right. There are 9 muses. And at one point, she starts to say her name. And she says Terp and then stops.
Turd. That's her name. Turd.
Turd.
I thought she meant turd. Like derp.
No, well, one derp. One of the muses is I looked it up because I wasn't sure if I can pronounce it. Terpsichore. She is the muse of dance, which would make sense. I would assume it would be singing, but okay. And her emblem is a lyra, or a lyre. I'm sorry. Now, do you guys know they did a stage version of this movie recently? Right?
Why?
Oh, goody. Yeah.
People actually pay money to see that?
Yes. And in the stage version,
my God, we're fucked.
They switched her muse to Cleo, which is the muse of history, which doesn't make any fucking sense to me, but okay. So, like I said,
of course.
Well, like anything of Xanadu is supposed to make sense.
They're talking about it, and she says, you know, we can't be together, and she just turns into light and disappears. So now Sonny's mopey, he's walking around, and he stumbles across the mural that they find at the beginning of the movie. On roller skates, this is an important part here, and he's looking at it, you know, he skates to the other side, and he's looking at it some more. And then out of nowhere, he starts building up speed and goes through the fucking mural into limbo.
I don't think this really happened. I think he bashed his brains in, and the entire thing, the entire fucking movie was all in his head. It was coma induced.
Yeah, that's a Jacob's Ladder scenario at this point on. Like, that's where he dies. And then he imagines everything else.
Beach people are standing over him the entire time the movie story plays out in his head.
The crawling spider dude is just one of the bugs going into his brain, you know? It's like,
yeah, there you go. He's pumping blood out of his open gashed face from smashing into that wall. And yeah, the rest of the movie is just that residual bit of dream that we all have in the back of our brains, and you know, the end.
could you imagine?
It'd be a better movie that way.
Could you imagine? Because when he skates back to build up speed, there's like some benches and tables on the other side of the street, and there are people sitting there. If this were to happen in real life, could you imagine the looks on their? Why is this guy skating into a fucking wall?
Yeah, this isn't going to end well.
Right. I pull out the camera. Get ready to get the best photos of the aftermath.
So he goes through the wall, and he ends up, the only way I can, I guess he's in limbo, because it's all black, and then the next thing you know, we have a floor looking like the inside of the monolith from 2001, A Space Odyssey. Meets Disco, and Kira shows up, and they're I can't leave, and then you start hearing Zeus, and Sonny has balls to talk shit to Zeus.
I almost said Goose.
Yeah, wrong movie.
Nobody talks shit to Goose. Zeus,
by the way, is also the butler, the voice of the butler from the toy.
Yeah, and Zeus also, he was one of the Quorum of 12 from the original Battlestar Galactica.
Yeah.
I recognized his voice immediately. I'm like, why do I know
Patrick
his voice?
McNee, yeah. He was John Steed in the Avengers.
No, that was, he has a weird name. Hold on.
Oh, wait, that's, oh, yeah. You know,
it's like Hyatt, damn it. Hold on. I didn't write it down. It's going to drive me nuts. Um, Xanadu.
So you're saying Sonny says, "Talk to me, Zeus."
Oh, nice. That's good. I like that.
I do like that he has a line where Michael Beck says, "Hey, Zeus."
Oh, God.
Which is, you know, how you pronounce Jesus in Spanish.
He was done by... Hey, Zeus. Oh, that's terrible. That's terrible. God damn it. I'll find it in a minute here. But, yeah, he was in, like I said, he was in Battlestar. Damn it. I looked this up last night and it's not showing it to me.
It was a terrible voice for Zeus, put it that way.
Yes, it was too high
pitched. Painfully British.
And it was way too high pitched.
Mm-hmm. It's portraying Zeus as, first of all, like the room that they're in, it looks like an Olin Mills picture or something where Sonny's like standing there and then like she's like the floating head above him where it's like
Yeah,
and just the way Zeus is talking, Zeus's wife Hera, I guess it's like, oh no, because I said so. Yeah, see,
it's like, Wilford Hyde White is the guy's name.
Yes, yep,
and I love how it's heavenly voice male. This is how in the credits, heavenly voice male. He even says he's Zeus. What, did they have to pay royalties to the Greek gods to use the fucking name?
Yeah. Didn't they have a scene where it's like, we don't go by those old fashioned names
these days? Yep.
I just about, you know, it was like,
what do you know, Bob?
You may call me Ralph.
We don't want to pay the Greeks. We're not going to call them Zeus.
Right.
It's so probably Wilford, because at that point they didn't know what they were doing and who was who.
And then it goes into probably the worst musical number in the whole thing. That music number in that trippy fucking Olin Mills portrait is just the weirdest shit. And it's almost like, if you listen to the lyrics, it's almost like she's singing to her parents.
Mm-hmm. It's normal. Just, people do that shit.
God. Well, she's a goddess, but I do like the ending because the Hera says to Zeus, you know, come on, let her do it. You know, it's just a moment. What does it matter? And then he's like, well, moment or forever, I forget. And then you see the stars come up, and then here we get to the finale.
Oh, Zeus, he's such a forgetful, all-knowing god.
Right.
Silly Zeus.
So, and then here we get to the ending, the grand finale, the ending, where it starts off.
You know, God.
Thank you, Zeus. Now, thank you, British Zeus.
Gene Kelly comes in skating. Everyone's, yeah, you're right. There was no patron. Earlier on, when Gene Kelly's talking to like a reporter, he says, yeah, we're not having any stars. These are just going to be regular people coming to the club. There are no fucking regular people in this club.
No.
And they all feel like they work there. Right. They're all part of the show.
Nobody's there willingly.
And they show, you know, Gene Kelly skating. And I guess when he saw a rough cut of this movie, he was pissed that you never see his feet. Because he was an accomplished figure skater and roller skater. He was actually really mad that you never see his feet except once or twice through the whole thing while he's on skates.
Why does that matter? Like, did he think that people were going to think that he wasn't actually skating?
Yes. He thought that that audiences would think that this was fake, and he wanted to prove, yes, I can skate.
Oh, my God.
I get it.
That's why he did
nobody the entire called movie. Kelly chicken.
That's why he did the movie. He's like, I can skate. That's the only reason why he did it. And then they cut out his feet. No wonder he's pissed. It's like, that's the only reason why I signed on to this horrible thing.
Well, I don't know. I mean, in some ways, I could see that. You know, I mean, here he is. He's an accomplished dancer, you know, choreographer, but he can skate too.
Wow. He didn't want to dance in the movie. That's what doesn't make any sense.
Right.
I feel like it kind of goes hand in hand with the fact that Gene Kelly's acting kind of like he's in a different movie this entire movie.
Mm.
Maybe he thought that this was going to be a roller skating movie, you know, full stop.
Well, you read the script.
And like, oh, no, we're going to do all this other shit, too.
Well, yeah, he read the script, but the script changed how many times? So they might have had him looking like some kind of super awesome speed skater disco dancer guy, and next thing you know, he's just watching a guy crawl around like a spider.
Yeah. And it's like, oh, we're going to have a scene where you're shopping for clothes. Isn't that going to be great?
So we get into the whole clapping, Xanadu, Xanadu, okay? And with the, dude, there were tightrope walkers, there was fucking trapeze artists, chicks swinging on their teeth.
Well, the beginning where they're all chanting Xanadu, and the fact that they all have jackets on that said Xanadu on them, on the back, I felt like this was like one of those morning meetings they have at Walmart to get everybody hyped up for the day.
Or
Xanadu!
I was thinking it reminded me of like a cult, you know, you just picture Jim Jones back there, or Walmart, you know, it's about the same thing.
Yeah, yeah. Interchangeable. They're like feeding him all this weird Kool-Aid, and you know.
Well, you did notice when Gene Kelly
taking notes.
Oh God, when Gene Kelly hands him the drink at the end, it looks a lot like Kool-Aid.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
a lot like this. Kool-Aid.
Drink this and hallucinate.
Oh,
it was all a dream.
Now I will say this here, and then when we see Kira again. She appears in this slinky looking modern, what would you call it? Just, you know, like a clubbing outfit, I guess, for lack of a better word. And where she does a reprieve of Xanadu. She starts singing the theme, which I thought was actually kind of cool. And she looks damn good in this outfit. But as it goes, it gets more bizarre.
She looks great through the whole movie. I mean, that's actually a line that his buddy that he works with the glasses actually says, and it made me laugh out loud, where he sees the album cover and he's like, wow, she looks great. Or no, oh, I'm sorry. He says, wow, she's great looking. I was like, who's ever said that about anybody? they're great looking.
Well,
and the amount of costume changes she goes through. So we start with the clubbing outfit with her hair down. And then what's next? We go into...
Oh, God, there's so many.
The cowboy's not next, right? No, that...
No. It's like the
That's like the third or fourth one.
There's like an old-timey, like, I want to say, like, flapper girl style one.
Yep, that's it. Yep. Yeah. She looks like a cigarette girl from the 1940s. That I actually like. And then she jumps into... this tiger print outfit with the shorts. I'm sorry, she looks like a cheap hooker. There's no other way to put it. She looks like a cheap hooker up there. And then it switches and she's in cowboy fringe.
Mm-hmm. Doing like a full-on hoedown song.
Right, what the fuck? I mean...
Well, I feel like that whole end scene is just a sizzle reel for her. And it's like... You know, hey, she can do all of this. It really is. It's almost like a demo.
Yeah.
But you know, that's what I felt like watching it. It was like, wow, yeah, we get it. Like, she's good at this. Like, she's a good singer. She's a good performer. She's great looking.
And
you know, the movie sucked.
But the movie is shit.
I tell you though, the part that got me was when she's in the fucking cowboy fringe. And she walks over and they slide that fake beer over and she's supposed to take a drink out of it. There was nothing. It was like a fake. Now, the other one, when a bartender or whatever, when they knock it back, you can actually see the liquid she swallows. The one Olivia Newton-John had, nope, this thing was a total prop and it was just so bad looking.
Well, they had to keep her pure because she was such a... That's what I remember most about her being a thing was that she wasn't like she had mass appeal because she wasn't slutty and she wasn't, you know, dirty or anything like that. She was like this wholesome, you know, girl next door that was a singer and a dancer and everything else, but they had to kind of keep up that facade.
But then they put her in that tiger stripe.
Right.
Well, even that, I mean, even as hookery as that looked, it wasn't, you know, she wasn't slutting it up in that. I don't feel like
she made
I
mean, it look I, as wholesome as you possibly could.
Yeah, she looked like a wholesome whore.
And then the innuendo from Physical later on, but that's a whole nother episode. But okay, so we got the and now we get the very last dance number where it's all of her sisters. Now, if you watch, her sisters appear in different spots through the whole thing in the background. The other muses, they're all there. But you have to watch for them.
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think they can learn for it.
And then
I gotta give you props on dedication for doing that because I've seen this probably more than you have, and I didn't even notice that all the except for the end scene where it's obvious that they're everywhere.
They all appear and they all do this dance number. Now I will say this, of all the outfits she wears in this whole movie, I like the muse dress. I think it's anyways, never mind.
She looks the best in that. I mean, she just looks just, you know, otherworldly and like classy beauty. Like she looks amazing in this movie.
And angelic
positives. Yeah, and the boots and even the roller skates, like the whole aesthetic of that just works, especially for that time period.
And what I find truly bizarre is they do this whole number, of course, in the her sisters transform into light, fly up, and she's on that pedestal in the middle. And did you notice it's just her and Sonny, and there's no one else in the place? It's fucking empty. And then all of a sudden, boom, people appear and they're dancing. Okay. And then she walks up as a barmaid going, "Would you like a drink?" It's like you said, it's like she completely forgot about him.
Yeah.
End movie.
I mean, it's par for the course for this movie because nothing makes sense. it's a whole lot of just things happening because.
And they're trying to make it seem like it's romantic or something that she gets to come back. But that's not her. That's just a clone of her or something. And he's okay with that, which tells you his love for her was never real. He's just like, hey, she looks good.
She's great looking. I'll take her.
And, you know, I tell you, like I said, I found a documentary on this. It's on YouTube if you want to find it.
Ooh.
But
so that's okay. We'll take your word for it.
Hard pass.
The executive producer in this movie swears it would have done better had it been released in more theaters.
Oh, okay.
It was only released in like 240 theaters nationwide, and he swears it would have been a bigger hit. No, dude, there's a reason why people didn't want the movie in theaters.
Yeah, the theaters can pick and choose. But he is right, because there's probably two or three grandmas out there that watch the movie no matter what they are. So they might have got an extra $100 or $200, you know.
But what's crazy is the fan following for this movie. There is a whole community of, I'm not saying it's as big as Star Wars here. That's Band not what Dudians. I mean. But they're,
who are these people?
Seriously, they interviewed some in this documentary. They interviewed some of these people. And they're just as ravenous as Star Wars fans for this movie.
They can be. Yeah, I've encountered them because I've loved that building so much that I sit there and have ended up in a couple Xanadu message boards and what have you over the years.
Good Lord.
Well, mostly because they have, like, you know, Google search the building, and people have photos that they took of the building after the movie because they become instant fans. And so I'm sitting there looking at some of these photos, and when you look at photos, you come across their posts, and then you're like, right. Oh gosh, those freaking insane idiots. Sorry, people, we're probably going to have hate now because I just call them.
Yeah, we idiots. Just started a war with all the Xanadu fans.
Oh no.
Quick.
But, you know,
we love this movie. Please don't kill us, because they're the type that probably would show up on your doorstep dressed as the creepy crawly spider dude and be like, we're going to kill you.
With a shotgun.
No, I heard you've been talking shit about my movie.
Probably glitter blowguns or something. They'll give us makeovers.
This movie would have done better. You know, it cost $20 million to make. To put that into perspective, Raiders of the Lost Ark cost $20 million. Star Wars cost $11 million. I mean, this was not a cheap movie, but it looks like a cheap movie. And I get fascinated by this with the budget of certain movies where it's like, where did the money go? Like, where did they put the money for this? Because if you take out all of the animated glowy effects and the animation by Don Bluth, like, where did they spend the money on this movie?
It went up their nose.
Yeah. Cocaine.
Costumes. You got to admit.
That ain't $20 million worth of costumes.
Oh, no. But I'm willing to bet a huge chunk of this went towards wardrobe.
Could be.
I don't know. I'll say it again. Star Wars cost $11 million.
Yeah. And they had custom-made masks.
They had creature effects. And they had,
a lot of the costumes, it looked like they just cut up some leotard and sprinkled glitter on them.
Yeah. And you got to remember how cheap clothes were back then. I don't get where that, unless they paid Gene Kelly $10 million, I don't understand.
He probably got $15 million.
But the going rate at that point for the biggest Hollywood stars wasn't even 10 million. I don't know. I think it's just ludicrous that movie cost that much money for what it was.
I had read somewhere that they said that stage, the very end stage with all the lights and given 1980 technology, I see where it would be expensive, but they said that alone was about $1 million. But then you stop and you look at Jabba the Hutt, he cost like $500,000 to make and he was way cooler.
Right.
Yeah. Way better technology.
One has heavily influenced pop culture for the next 40 years and one is a complete shit show.
Yeah. You know, it's like, why would they spend so much on a stage? The disco era was dying and they basically made a rotating disco stage.
Yeah. You can feel the 70s influences in this movie. There's no doubt about it. But go ahead, Matt.
Well, I was going to say, if this movie came out 2 years prior, it would have been a much bigger success. This movie bookended the end of disco, pretty much. Disco was very much a fad, but it was, I want to say by 81, that disco was dead.
Ross, go ahead.
I was just saying, this could have been what the final nail in the coffin for disco. And in that case, we need to say thank you, Xanadu, for finishing off disco.
Well, they do say that when disco died is when they did that. It was in a ballpark. Can't stop
the music.
Yeah, and they blew up all the records on a baseball field.
Oh, I don't know. I don't know what that is.
It was a promotion for a. I'll have to look it up. It was a promotion for a radio station. I want to say it was in Chicago, I think. And they invited everyone to come and take their disco records, and they literally blew them up on the field before a baseball game. And believe it or not, I've read some historians that said that event marked the official death of disco.
I don't know.
So
I actually haven't heard that, but I am going to have to Google that because it sounds really cool. Do they have video footage of them blowing him up?
Yes, there's footage. Oh,
could you imagine if you're like someone in the crowd that got killed by shrapnel of vinyl?
You're killed by a fucking Bee Gees album.
They're just sitting there with a disc in their head.
So, as we usually do, guys, how do we rate this movie? Realistically, 1 through 10.
I rated a 1 because I have to. because I've never been so happy for a movie to be over. When the credits rolled, I shit you not, I was like, yes, thank you.
Did you keep checking your time as you're watching? It's like, okay, 3 more minutes.
Come like on, I got up off the couch like I just got released from prison. I was like strolling out of the room like, thank God I'm going to bed. Yeah, I hate this movie. I thought it was just absolute crap. My two positives about this movie are that Olivia Newton-John looks fantastic. And she did it. I mean, she was a phenomenon at the time, and this was very much her vehicle. I think her and Gene Kelly did the best with what they had in this film. And the music is, I mean, it was I want to say multi-platinum record, soundtrack for this. And, you know, a couple of those songs are just really, really good. The Magic, I was listening to it yesterday on YouTube. I was just like, yeah, this song's fantastic. Like, why don't people like latch on to this more? Like, I haven't heard that song in decades. That's where it stops. Everything else about this movie is just, like I said earlier, it is a piece of dog shit on the side of the road. I will never watch this movie again. If anyone out there is on the fence or has never seen this movie, do not watch it. Don't waste your time.
So it's a no recommendation from you.
That is a hard no.
Art?
Oh, God. Yeah, this is like a negative one with a pile of shit on top of it. A shit that's been shit on a couple of times. This was awful. And like Matt said, the only bright spots in the movie were Olivia Newton-John and Gene Kelly, and that was it. It ends there. This isn't like Top Gun bad, but Jesus, this was awful. I'm never watching this again. Well, I think God hates this story as much as I do. Like, I actually think God hates this movie as much as I do. This was awful.
Well, he didn't appreciate that whole Zeus representation, I'm sure.
No, probably not. No, but this was definitely taking like a cheese grater to the tip of your dick. And I couldn't watch it sober. It was impossible. There was no way to do it.
So what you're saying is it's like masturbating with a cheese grater, slightly amusing, but mostly painful.
Yeah. And then when you're done, you're like, okay, well, I got off, but it still sucked. It was awful. I'm bleeding everywhere now.
So you give it a negative one.
Oh yeah. And if I could give it negative more, I would.
Recommendation? If you've never seen it, is it at least worth watching once to see how bad it is?
Or if you like a sack of broken glass shoved up your ass, by all means, watch it. Like fragmented broken glass from hell. I mean, this was awful. Words don't even describe it.
Wow.
I'd never tell another. I mean, unless I really hated that person and I wanted them to a mental state where they were suicidal, I would never recommend this movie to anybody unless I truly hated them. Like maybe Saddam or I don't know, Adolf Hitler, I'd recommend this movie to, but I can't think of too many other people I would. This was garbage on top of shit. I mean, fuck, there was even a Don Bluth cartoon in the middle of it. They didn't know what the fuck they were doing. It was just like, let's add this. It was like two directors in a cup.
Oh, this is, and damn. This is why I recommended it, because I hate you all.
Okay. Yeah, I'm never gonna forgive you for this one, Russ. This hurt. This hurt bad.
I know. No,
Russ.
I give it a no score because it is a horrible movie. I have to score something. Well, a zero.
Okay.
Art gave it you realize that means Matt rated it higher than I did.
Yeah, well, I played by the rules. I gave it a 1 through 10.
Yeah,
you guys are throwing out integers.
Yeah, true. Okay. In that case, I'll give it a 1 also. Yeah, got to play by the rules. I recommend watching it, no, but I do recommend anyone who loves the Pan Pacific Auditorium to go on YouTube and just watch that scene for the footage of the building. And if you really want to watch Olivia Newton-John, you can watch that end scene with all her costume changes on YouTube without suffering too much.
Yeah, I feel like that's a better experience, is just doing that.
But to watch the whole thing, because even last night when I, because I hadn't watched it for several years. Like I said, I used to use this movie. I had the VHS. I found it at Goodwill for 99 cents. And I would pop it in. I had sleep apnea before I had a CPAP machine. So I'd wake up and be like, can't sleep. So I pop that in. I'd be like,
you paid too much.
See, I can see using this as birth control. Like you put this movie in and no boner.
I don't know. It sounds like Dean was getting a little with Olivia Newton-John here and there.
Hey, who wouldn't, man? Come on. Come on.
She's great looking.
Yeah, yeah.
She's great looking.
But, you know, I like I would say throughout the thing, it would be great to have someone go back in and just re-edit it and just add in just the wackiest, even more eccentric, goofy stuff into it from other movies. You know, it's like you could just picture Sunny and, you know, using like Warriors footage and then having like
Warriors come out and play,
you know, just something like that, just screwing with the entire audience and the entire movie again. You know, that would be entertaining.
That would be a great movie. If you take Sunny out and then replace him with Michael Beck as Swan from the Warriors in every single scene.
Oh God!
Like, I mean, like when he's beat up and he's like bloody and everything, and when the muses come out, he can be like, "Let's take these lame fucks."
Yes, yes, that's it.
Yeah, you know.
And the Ghostbusters, you gotta have the Ghostbusters going after the muses at the beginning. Just have them shooting their proton packs, you know, and. The scene when they got Slimer and he's in the going in and except have it be like one of the random muses.
Help!
Wow.
You killed Cleo.
We came, we saw, we kicked its ass.
I don't know. just for the scene with Gene Kelly, I will give this a 2.5. Just for that dance scene with Gene Kelly. I'll give it a hearty two and a half.
Can't fault you for that.
But you're right. And a whole, this movie sucks. It's just part of it. It's just so hard to, you're right, Art. It's so hard to get through. I've watched this movie 4 times since when we decided to do it.
And that was like, your own fault.
Man. I'm so sorry, Dean. I did not expect you to watch it 4 times.
You watched it four times in a documentary.
The documentary was actually interesting, but on the third watch through, I'm like, why am I doing it? And when I watched it last night, just so it was fresh in my head for today, it was painful. It was just so painful. It's like, oh. But like I said, this is someone's Coke-filled fever dream.
Yeah.
That is what this, I mean.
Well, I feel like that's how history has kind of remembered this movie, too, for the last 4 decades is, wow, what a mistake. But it was a product of the time, I guess.
Just so everyone on Earth can experience the shit show, I would recommend everyone watch it at least once. Just so they could perceive how bad it is. We can tell you how bad it is all day. Until you see it yourself, you're never going to believe how shitty this movie is.
I wouldn't have had a clue. I could not do the Cliff Notes for this and then do this podcast. I was 10 minutes into it. I'm like, I wouldn't have believed anyone if they told me how shitty this was.
You had to see it for yourself.
And I love bad movies I love scraping the good out of bad movies. I feel like it's more honest than big budget, you know, giganto films. I can watch a movie like Samurai Cop and be like, oh my God, this is so bad that it becomes good again. And, you know, and they were all, everybody involved in that movie was trying, like they were trying their best and it just, you know, it just didn't work, but it's still damn entertaining. This movie isn't entertaining. It's a complete mess.
And they had a $20 million budget.
Their budget.
The only person that benefited from this movie was Clint Howard, because we didn't spend the last hour ragging on him.
Well, now you just avoided that, though, because you brought him up. The poor guy was like, oh, darn it.
No,
motherfucker.
And I agree with Matt. It had a great soundtrack. If anything, the good to come out of this was the soundtrack.
I really feel bad for ELO, because they are, even with these songs, it seems like they were really pushed into making music for this movie. And it's not something that they seem to be the kind of band to do. They were very open to being creative in their entire career. And it's almost like it sucked the life out of them. They're like gone after Xanadu.
Yeah, that song Don't Bring Me Down takes on a whole new meaning now.
And the Tubes kept the fucking costumes, the orange jumpsuits, and used them on tour. That's the only
poor bastards.
They did it willingly.
They're like, free is a very good price, as Tom Peterson, a local furniture salesman, would always stay up here. And
as far as orange jumpsuits go, I mean, they were top notch, but
orange is the new black.
Yeah, they look like they were on a road crew. Picking up garbage. Hey, there's some symbolism for you.
Oh, man. You know, that would be great for new prison, jumpsuits. Instead of having it say inmate, just spray paint Xanadu.
Xanadu on the back.
That would be in a whole new, or would that fall under pain?
Cruel and unusual punishment.
Yeah, cruel and unusual.
I hereby sentence you to 20 years hard labor in Xanadu.
Oh fuck! Why couldn't you just give me the chair?
I have to watch this movie once a week.
No, daily. It's on 24/7 rotation.
So, is there anything else we want to add to this, guys?
I think we're done bashing it.
Yeah. I think we've sufficiently broken all of its ribs. I don't think I have the energy to throw another punch. This movie is just pure shit.
I would agree.
I warn all of you listening, do not watch it.
Queen.
Because normally I'd be like, watch this movie and then you'll enjoy this podcast more. But I'll take one for the team here. Don't watch this movie. It sucks.
This is one movie Queen could not have saved.
No.
Even if they had done the soundtrack.
I don't know if anything could have saved this movie. Even if the script was better, it's still crap. Even if the performances, even if more things happened.
No, because that's what this movie needed, was more shit.
Yeah, I mean, there's nothing that would have saved this. It was just a cinematic abomination. Watching this movie makes me wonder if I really like movies anymore. Like it's just bad. It's like when you go to work at a place and you start it and you're like, okay, this is going to be great. This is a new job. And the first day you're just like, oh my God, I never want to work again.
Yeah, this movie actually makes Rhinestone with Sylvester Stallone and Dolly Parton look like a cinematic masterpiece.
I would rather watch that movie 10 times in a row than this movie once.
Wow. See,
I've recommending this to you guys to watch or to have a review. I've made you appreciate everything else in your life.
Plan 9 from Outer Space was better than this.
See?
Yeah. More entertaining.
Watching paint dry can be more entertaining than this.
I mean, this is just a hair above a Treat Williams movie. Just a hair.
Well, that would be another person we could put into this movie just randomly. Treat Williams, just to make Art happy.
It couldn't get any worse.
Just so our listeners know, Art hates Treat Williams with a passion.
He's my human mortal enemy.
So if he's listening, Art's going to get you one day, Treat.
Well,
he's going to be like knocking on my door in 10 minutes.
FBI. Oh, how do you?
Well, is there no other last words, guys?
No, that's all I got.
Other than fuck this movie. God.
And on that note, thank you, everyone, and we will catch you on the next one.
Don't forget to like, share, and subscribe. It really helps us out.